Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. Lovely to see everybody here today. I would like to acknowledge, I'd like to open the meeting, sorry, at, oh, we're 9:31, we're a minute late, sorry. And first up, I would like to acknowledge the Quandamooka people, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet. I would also like to pay respect to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians who are present here today. I just have to read a section on public conduct at meetings. All members of the public present at the meeting must, not without prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take any photographs. Remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. Not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present. Be suitably dressed and turn off all mobile phones to silent and leave the meeting to take any calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at the meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements and may, with or without such warning, require the person to leave the meeting and not return for a period as the chairperson decides. This period may include future meetings. Now, it has been noted that there is a leave of absence for Mayor Karen Williams. So I'd like to ask for a mover that a leave of absence be granted for Mayor Karen Williams, who is attending the Councillor Mayor's SEQ delegation in Canberra. Move Councillor Bishop. Can I have a seconder? Seconded Peter Mitchell. All in favour? Thank you. Noting that Elliot and Golay aren't here yet. And this morning, I would like to welcome a member of the Redlands Minister Fellowship, Pastor Sharon Rasmussen, Harvest Church, Capalaba, to lead council in a brief devotional segment. Welcome.
Wonderful, and thank you for that introduction. It truly is a privilege and an honour to be here this morning. My husband and I pastor Harvest City Church, to which I just want to bring greeting to you all. Know that we pray for you constantly, almost every 3 or 4 days. We have a real heart for the Redlands. We have a real heart for those in authority for the Redlands. And we just pray that God will lead you and guide you with every decision that you make. In just seeking the Lord this morning, I wanted to share with you just two very small verses. I won't take up too much time. In Proverbs 29, verse 2, it says that when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked bear rule, the people mourn. And we see so much in all the circles that I move in disability sector, in schools, in business, everybody's saying the same thing, that it's broken, the system is broken. And so we need to remember that there is a way to fix it. And I just praise God that He has all the answers. And the prophet Isaiah was shared the words from the Lord, saying that my ways are not your ways and my thoughts are not your thoughts. And I know personally for my life, it has always been, Lord, what do you want in my life? How should I move forward now? Because, you know, best, He's the creator of everything. He knows design and how to put things together. And so it's a wonderful thing to be able to trust and rely on Him. Just a wonderful thing to do that. Righteousness is quite an amazing thing, and I think whether you are God-fearing or not, there is a certain way that things should be done. It's exciting to know as well that the Word tells us exactly what wisdom is, and I know with the meeting moving ahead, you certainly need wisdom to make decisions. There's lots of decisions that you have to make as you serve this great city. We just love the Redlands. I can't express that to you enough. But it says here in the book of James, it says exactly what wisdom is. It says that wisdom, the wisdom we need to rely on is not our own wisdom, but it is the wisdom from above. And that wisdom is pure, first and foremost. There's no strings attached. And then it's peaceable. And then it's gentle. And it's easy to be entreated. So when I look to God for His wisdom, whatever it works out, it's very easy to follow through for. It's not a struggle. It's not a strive. And it's full of mercy and good fruit. So you always see good things out of these godly decisions through this wisdom. And it is without partiality and it is without hypocrisy. And so much, I know you probably see it, I see it. Now, I'm just a little person on the ground. I see a lot of hypocrisy. But we know if we can tap in to that wisdom that is pure and that is peaceable and that is easily entreated, we know that we will have good fruit in this city, good fruit that will remain. And I just love that. It's a great little thing to live by. And it is without hypocrisy. So we know that it's just and it's fair. And I just want to leave you with that. If we could just pray, I'd like to pray for you all this morning. That would be wonderful. Thank you for this opportunity. Lord God, we thank you that you are God, that you are the great I am. Father, I thank you. You are the way, the truth, and the life. And Lord God, this morning, as all these members of the City Council meet together, Lord, and even the members of the public, Father, we just pray for your wisdom for all these decisions ahead. Lord, we just pray for a peace over everybody. Lord, that the decisions will be easily entreated as we read this morning. And Father, that there will be wonderful fruit that will remain from the decisions that come forth. Lord God, bless everybody. Pour your favour and your blessing upon them, Lord, because they are fearfully and wonderfully created and loved by you. And I pray all that in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Thank you, councillors. We now move on to recognition of achievement, and Councillor Edwards has notified me that he has a recognition.
No, thank you, Wendy. I'd like to acknowledge that today is the last general meeting for our CEO, Bill Lyon. Bill, who joined council in late 2012, finishes with council on the 20th of April to pursue other opportunities. During his time at the helm, Bill has steered a dramatic transformation of Redland City. Under his leadership, Redland City Council is now leaner, more efficient, more effective and much more responsive to people than the organisation Bill inherited in 2012. There is less red tape, and our people, our community and our officers are our top priorities. It is said that any organisation is only as good as its people. Bill has worked with councillors and senior management to instill pride in council officers, pride in doing the job to the best of their ability, pride in achievement, and pride in serving their community. Officers tell me they feel a much more active part of the organisation because their options are valued and they are more involved in the decision-making process. They feel empowered. Our corporate policy mission statement says it all. Make a difference, make it count. And we see examples of this every day. Our Mayor and CEO Excellence Awards recognise the quality of our people and are highly sought after. Gone are the risk-averse attitudes of the past. In its place is a confidence for people to make decisions, to take responsibility for what they do, and do it to the best of their ability. Redland City Council is actually the envy of many other councils. And I'm proud to be part of the team of councillors that has worked with the CEO and the Mayor to help cushion the costs of living impact on Redlanders. Working together, we have been able to restrict rate increases for the past 4 years to keep them within the cumulative CPI, lower than other South East Queensland councils. We've helped business do business with a new economic development policy, and policies developed with the aim of growing important business sectors. We have actively sought investment in our city because investment brings jobs for Redlanders. We've encouraged new educational facilities to join our quality schools and colleges. We've overcome challenges to enjoying a financial position we can be proud of. We have delivered successive budget surpluses. We have identified millions of dollars in savings to the benefit of the ratepayers and without any decrease to the service delivery. We have lower debt and strong cash reserves that we will invest in the future for our city. We are geared for a bright future, and we are planning for that future. Bill, you leave a legacy you can be proud of. You've left council in a much better organisation than the one you inherited 4 years ago. And on a personal note, Bill, I appreciate that you're with your open door access, your response to assists wherever possible, and your friendship. Bill, we wish you and your family all the best in the future.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Bill. Okay, I now move on to the receipt and confirmations of the minutes, and I ask for a mover that the minutes of the general meeting held on the 8th of March 2017 be confirmed. Moved Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Elliott. Is there any discussion on that one? No, I'll put it to the vote. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. So now we're up to the matters outstanding for minutes of the previous general meeting. I haven't been advised that there are any, so we'll move into public participation. Can I ask for a mover that the meeting adjourn for 15 minutes public participation segment to allow members of the public to address council on matters of public interest related to local government? Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Tolte. Can I put the put the vote, please? Thank you. Passed unanimously. Now, just before we move into that, there's a section I have to read. You may have noticed the signage in the chambers regarding public participation at meetings. It is Council's usual practice to require a person wishing to address the meeting to state their name, suburb or organisation that they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. This information is recorded in the minutes of the meeting, which is a public document available for inspection at Council's admin office and published on Council's website. I also advise that the meeting is being recorded in audio-visual and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. Any person addressing a meeting will state their name and suburb or organisation they represent and subject they wish to speak about, stand unless unable to do so, act and speak with decorum, be respectful and courteous, and make no comments directed to any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to consider each application on its merits and consider any relevant matter in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address the local government. Give priority to members of the public who have made written application to the CEO to address the meeting. Determine the maximum number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. Each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes dependent on the number of speakers. And withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. Debate or discussion cannot be entered into at this time. I'd also like to make you aware of our hearing loop advice. If there are any speakers who are hearing impaired, please wait in your seat and we will bring the microphone to you. Please stand while speaking though. I would now like to call on the written application that I have received here from Mr. Bruce Hennessy of Cleveland. If you'd like to come forward. Thank you, Bruce. And before you begin, may I please ask you to state your name and suburb or any organisation you may represent and then begin when you're ready. Thank you.
My name is Bruce Hennessy. I've been a resident of Thornlands and Cleveland for approximately 9 years now.
Thank you.
My credentials are that I have nearly 30 years service in the oil and gas industry. I was a senior head operator at the Caltex refinery at Kurnell, Australia's largest refinery. I hold a diploma in chemical engineering, a part degree in mechanical engineering. I'm a trained firefighter at station officer level, and I'm currently an accredited OH&S inspector. My specialised field was the operation of various types of heaters, incinerators and furnaces, both vertical and horizontal. Today I'd like to make a statement regarding a large and potentially deadly threat to ourselves and our local environment. I refer, of course, to the proposal to construct and install an industrial incinerator-type furnace at a site in Mount Cotton. All incinerators cause emissions, no matter how efficient they are. One of their worst byproducts is something called vanadium pentoxide. Now, vanadium pentoxide, in its base form, is a chemical that's used in steel production and a bonding agent in jet engines. It is a very powerful thing. In one form, it's produced by a byproduct in mostly industrial furnace stacks, incinerators, and as a result of both high and low temperature operations. It mostly coats the inside walls of vents and stacks, and is considered one of the most toxic, poisonous carcinogenics on the planet. In the industry form, it's often removed by superheating the stack, and as it breaks off, either drops into the firebox or blown into the atmosphere. Therefore, the incinerator continues to blow vanadium into the surrounding countryside non-stop, where it then becomes airborne carcinogenic. Now, working as I have in the past in this type of plant, I can report to you that of the 430 men and women I work with, 221 were struck down with various cancers that attack the eyes, lungs, brain.
Look, I think, whilst I understand your concerns, Councillor Tolte, I think this is public participation. It is just that. He's entitled to his opinion, and whether you take that into consideration is a choice for you. So, again, I think the resident is entitled to his opinion. He stated his qualifications, and I would just put the caveat that until we know those sort of things, and you could, you know, independently verify the facts, just take it as that. So I don't think there's a point of order to stop him at this stage. It's Councillor Tolte.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. Working in the past with this type of plant, I can report to you that of the 430 men and women I work with, 221 were struck down with various cancers that attack the eyes, lungs, brain, and in my case, the esophagus. There are over 120 deaths Australia-wide in the past 10 years, directly attributed to vanadium pentoxide. It floats in the wind, it spreads easily. It's one of the leading causes of birth defects, and in particular, blindness in newborn babies. I only have a two-page document here. In close proximity to this planned unit are hundreds of new and proposed houses. The effects of this fallout cannot be emphasised enough. I understand this type of furnace has never been tried or proven in Australia in its intended form previously. It will no doubt require a blower plant as part of it. These blowers emit high-volume sound frequency waves that travel considerable distances and are hard to muffle. The position of this furnace is slated to be in a shallow valley. The stack height is not notified. Therefore, sound, vibration, and deadly emissions will spread very easily over the community, particularly at night. I'm not aware of any air monitoring stations in the area, and these particles, depending on size, can easily travel up to 5 kilometres, be absorbed into hard surfaces and even air conditioners. It can take the paint off cars. And just be aware that to operate these plants properly, these incinerators must work 24 hours a day. They are not a wall switch sort of a thing that you're going to turn on and off. They take time to warm up. They take time to cool down. I also understand that at any one time, more than 700 metric tonnes of decomposing fuel stock will be stacked and piled up. This is in reality a 700-tonne bomb. This is, as any firefighter will attest, has a definite potential for spontaneous combustion and methane explosion and a probable cloud fire. These fires are hard to extinguish. My guess is that this design intent, and let's be totally honest, is a very dated technology, will reach maximum throughput and volume in less than 6 weeks' operation. No doubt the operators will want to build another one to operate in train to expand a never-shrinking market. And just in closing, the potential for a disaster is immense. The potential for deadly chemical emissions is guaranteed. And finally, let's be aware that our current environment is a consequence of human intervention. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hennessy. The CEO would just like to make a comment.
Just councillors for public record, I suppose, sorry, Mr. Hennessy, it's probably just to note that the Environmental Protection and Heritage Group of the state actually regulate this. So whilst there are concerns, and I understand the residents' concerns, councillors, you will remember that that is the state to actually regulate. So, again, we put our trust in the state and they look in that sort of situation. So just putting that point.
As I'm not aware... are there any other speakers? Sorry, I didn't ask. If anyone else would like to speak, you can ask. I can't see who you are, sorry, behind Murray Elliott, but if you'd like to... hello. If you'd like to come forward, please, and just please state your name and suburb or organisation you represent, and then begin when you are ready. Thank you.
Good morning, councillors. Good morning, council officers. My name is Mrs. Janita Grosvenor and I live at Redland Bay with my family. I have six people living under my roof that I have to take care of and be concerned about their welfare. I'd just like to read you the email that I actually sent to all the councillors because it's in bullet form and I think I can get through it rather quickly. To all councillors, points to consider before you vote. Thank you. One, the Mount Cotton Super Quarry is about to commence operations at Gramsow Road, Mount Cotton. By the Barrow Group's own calculations, this will add 80,000 quarry truck movements for the life of its 60-year lease onto Mount Cotton Road and surrounding local roads through Mount Cotton. If the biomass incinerator begins operations, it will mean even more trucks on Mount Cotton Road and surrounding local roads. Who pays for the upkeep of the local roads? The Queensland State Government has been negligent in providing the Redlands with proper roads infrastructures, like upgraded roads, to cope with current traffic, let alone the Mount Cotton Super Quarry life expectancy, as well as the biomass incinerator truck traffic. We also have currently a lot of very large chicken transport trucks that use our roads 24 hours a day, plus Mount Cotton is a major haulage truck route through from the M1 all the way through to Cleveland. Exactly how many chicken waste haulage trucks will be required to deliver up to 70,000 tonnes annually to the Hillview Biomass Incinerator development? Will the Cleveland Power Company expand its operations in future and ask the Queensland Government or RCC if it can increase the annual amount of spent chicken waste that it is allowed to store or burn? Also, how many trucks will be needed to deliver start-up fuels of sawdust and LPG gas? How much LPG gas will be stored on the Hillview Road development? Will the LPG gas cylinders be stored near the 7,000-tonne holding sheds? Point number three, how will the chicken waste storage holding bays be vented in order to stop the build-up of methane gas from the spent chicken manure waste? How much methane gas will be released into the atmosphere directly into our local air? Is there a way to measure this, considering methane gas is unhealthy for both humans and the environment? Has the Cleveland Power Company considered using another safer, more efficient process called the anaerobic digestion biogas process? This process captures all of the methane gas and it can be done in situ on the chicken and egg farms, thus eliminating the need for any truck movements at all, and also eliminating the need to store 7,000 tonnes of volatile chicken manure waste near LPG gas cylinders, near residential areas, near busy Mount Cotton Road, Mount Cotton Public School, which is a community school, a church and a local dance and drama hall. Point number four, thousands more trucks on our roads basically means much less road safety and this cannot be offset. Point number five, more trucks also mean PM2 particulate matter air pollution from truck exhausts. There are many up-to-date health reports on how PM2 particulate matter is responsible for respiratory illnesses, especially in young children, such as the children that would be going to Mount Public Cotton School, and the fetuses of pregnant women. Basically, we know that this is not a vote that should be taken in isolation as just one biomass waste incinerator. You know the super quarry is about to start at Mount Cotton. You know there's 80,000 more truck movements about to begin when they start their blasting operations. That's 80,000 more quarry trucks on our roads, and mainly Mount Cotton Road. And all impacts on the people who live at Mount Cotton and the children at Mount Cotton Public School. Point number six, Mount Cotton Public School has grossly inadequate public parking facilities for its pupils, and parents are forced to park across the other side of Mount Cotton Road, near Seaview Road, away from the school. Currently, there are no safety traffic lights where parents and their children can safely cross the road from parking near the Mount Cotton Lutheran Church and Dance Hall to get to the school or the bus stop for pupils catching a bus to other schools from there. It is an incredibly dangerous situation, as not only do they have to watch out for the normal day-to-day congested traffic along Mount Cotton Road, but they have to dodge the many large chicken haulage trucks entering and leaving from Seaview Road from Golden Cockerel. Seven, I believe the Redlands community have not been properly informed ahead of time of the vote on Wednesday today by either the RCC or the Redlands City Bulletin, our only local newspaper. An article on this vote in this paper is not being delivered to homes in the Redlands until today, the day of the vote. And in some suburbs, such as Redland Bay, where my family lives, our local paper is not delivered until Thursday, tomorrow, the day after the vote. In this article, Councillor Julie Tauti for Div 6 and David Bray from Cleveland Power said they would be having a pop-up information session for 2 hours between 1pm and 3pm.
I'm sorry, Ms. Gray, you're not allowed to refer to any councillor by name.
Oh, sure. No problem. But the point is that there was an information session advertised in the local paper that's not going to be delivered until today for an information pop-up session at Mount Cotton Park. That happened last Saturday. Not everybody is on Facebook or social media, so without a hard copy newspaper, how were residents of Mount Cotton meant to be aware of this pop-up two-hour information centre session or the RCC vote today? Number eight, and I've only got a couple more points. A condition of these extensions of time for the biomass incinerator have been that the community must be kept informed of what is going on with this project, including having a community liaison committee, and that's condition number nine. It is also reasonable to assume that if this MCU material change of use was presented now as a new application, that there would be many more submissions made against it from Mount Cotton residents, local farmers and new local businesses. Considering the first application for this biomass chicken waste incinerator was made 13 years ago, and the fact that Mount Cotton and surrounding nearby suburbs like Redland Bay, Thornlands and Victoria Point have experienced a rapid increase in their populations since then, compared to what their populations were 13 years ago, it would be reasonable to expect that the new submissions could easily number in their thousands, not 333 that were accepted 13 years ago. It is also reasonable to assume that many businesses would object to this biomass incinerator if it was a new MCU now compared to 13 years ago. For example, there's a local winery now hosts regular outdoor concerts with its extremely popular A Day on the Green concerts. These concerts bring performers, bands, visitors and tourists to Mount Cotton from all over the world. It never did this 13 years ago. It also has family golf facilities now, which is only a recent addition to their facilities. Even the local council has only hosted Carols by Candlelight there for the past 2 years, and this has attracted thousands of residents from all over the Redlands to Mount Cotton. Another thing that we need to take in consideration is environmental damage. What does the Redlands City Council want the Redlands to be known for?
Sorry to interrupt again. It's been just 8 minutes.
Oh, sure. I'll finish off. That's fine. Finally, before you vote today, please think about the legacy you will be leaving to the Redlands and to Mount Cotton in particular. If this heavy industrial development was proposed in your electorate, would your residents be happy about it? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before I close public participation, was there anyone else that I'm not seeing behind the chairs or anything? No? Okay, so we'll now move on to... I'll have a mover to close public participation. Resume normal proceedings. Moved, Councillor Bishop, seconded. I saw a hand up, Murray Elliott. All in favour? Thank you. Okay, so we'll now move on to petitions or any presentations. And I believe, Councillor Mitchell, you have one. Thank you.
Yes, thanks. Through you, Chair. I've got the pleasure of presenting a petition from some residents, Elizabeth Maloney and Jacqueline Wall, requesting the council continue the free exercise program in Bloomfield Street Park, Cleveland, as it supports local business, cafes, supermarkets after the class.
Okay, so do you have an actual motion there to read somewhere?
Sure.
Yep,
do.
If you could just move it and then I'll ask for a seconder.
Yep. So the proposed motion is that the petition is of an operational nature and be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Do I have a seconder for that? Councillor Golley, did you want to speak to it now again, or I'll just put it to the vote?
Would you like to speak to it?
Yeah, yep, yeah, thank
yeah,
you.
Please. Yeah, I was thrilled to receive this, and I'll rather than carry on myself, I'll read some extracts from a cover letter that the residents point. I was particularly thrilled because it was a council officer and a council initiative that received such great support, and the residents were moved so much to go out and gather a petition of over 200 signatories. So I thought that was great. So something very positive coming back. So I'll read you some of the words. So following the initiative of Redland City Council, Bloomfield Street Park has been brought to life with yoga in the park on Friday mornings. The residents talk about this has helped to meet new people, build friendships, has boosted local business through the coffee shops, newsagents, supermarkets and other local stores they visited. They go on to say that they value Redlands as a strong community, as we all do, and this is part of building a better community and creating a strong identity. They talk about discovering new stores, new shops, they were not aware of, so hence they've become new customers of stores around Bloomfield Street and the surrounds. They talk about the benefits of a health and wellbeing program that this would be part of, and the consensus amongst their group and friends that they've met down there is to keep the program operating, not necessarily in the current form of yoga, but to be inclusive of other activities, and they go on to make some suggestions, which is wonderful, some ideas coming through. Self-defence, Tai Chi, Pilates, light aerobic classes, CPR or first aid courses, and lots of others that they carry on. But they're keen to see things continue. The opportunities are out there, they say. The people are there. It's a matter of using the ratepayers and council funds for the betterment of the community as a whole. And I don't think there'd be anyone here that disagrees with that. While this program is also meant to be citywide, and I certainly agree with that, they do go on a little jealously to talk of Cleveland and Bloomfield Street. Yes, there are other areas that can be looked at, but if the park area is not in the local traders area, this is not building the business in the Redlands, as people go straight home and not participate or spend money in their area. So I'm thrilled that they're so interested. I'm thrilled that they've taken the time to write this petition. I'd also like to add my personal congratulations to the officers on what's the beginning of a great initiative. Your community is obviously very thankful, so that's a nice thing for you all to hear. And certainly your councillors also value your good work. This fits also beautifully with my personal commitment to the CBD of Cleveland revitalisation and the trader engagement I've been doing, and I'll keep working on that as well. So with that, I'd like to present the petition to you.
Okay, did any councillor have another comment or anything they'd like to say? Yes, Councillor Elliott?
Just a question through you, Chair, to Councillor Mitchell. What was the petition about again? No, honestly, I'm not trying to be smart.
The residents were hoping that it would be able to be to continue on from here, to become just a rolling program locally. That wasn't the intent of this early trial, but that's the petition was just saying well done, and they'd love to see it continuing on.
Okay. Can I add, if it's an operational matter, wouldn't it have to come back to count? We're going to have to make the decision. When we say yes, it goes on forever, it tends to go on forever.
Look, again, I think, through you, Madam Chair, to Councillor Elliott, looked at it was the trial was just that, a trial, to see about the activation. It was part of the CBD initiatives. So Council Officer Frank Pearce and I think, I'm just trying to think of, and Tim, a range of those are working on the various activities. So yes, it would come back to Council if we were going to extend beyond that free trial and see how that goes. And I think there is, from the feedback, ample discussion for you councillors about whether you continue it elsewhere in the city, given that reception, but that will be a decision of council.
Okay, so it's been moved as an operational matter, as long as that's happening.
We receive the petition and then we will, any action that would go further and commit further council funds would come back to council as part of that overall budget process or an individual paper.
Sure, thank you very much.
Councillor Bishop.
Thank you very much. Just acknowledging the tremendous, overwhelming, positive response from the community wanting to be engaged and encourage that sort of engagement, and great to see that engagement with the residents in the CBD. It's obviously the human bit is the critical bit, and people wanting to be engaged. Just noting that one of the things going forward that council and all levels of government are trying to do is to identify where there are synergies with other parties who see a vested interest in these sorts of initiatives. And I dare say that the Cleveland traders who are benefiting from this pilot project should be very much involved in how funding may be arranged in a collaborative way so that the benefits can flow and keep the community and the civic and the commercial realm all sort of working together, which is ultimately what community development's all about, and that's what this is. So, I think it's appropriate that Murray Elliott has mentioned that we think about the purse strings and how the community can autonomously work together to fund these things in future. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion on this? Yes, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, through you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Mitchell, I raised the question regarding petitions. We haven't, Councillor Elliott, last meeting tabled a petition, and yourself. How many people signed that petition, thanks? Or roughly?
Yeah, it was over 200.
I think I'm happy to have that on record. With petitions, obviously, it's a minimum of 10 signatures, but I think it's important to note.
Healthy above 10.
Okay, so councillors, are we ready to vote now? I'll put the vote. All in favour? Unanimous. Thank you. Okay, we'll now move on to item 9, order of business. Now, there is a motion here to accept a late item. The Donald Simpson Centre funding agreement be received and discussed as item 11.2.4. Do I have a mover for that? Councillor Mitchell. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Edwards. Councillor... No, I just put it to the vote, don't I? Okay, I'll just put that to the vote to receive that late item. All in favour? Those against? 1, 2, 3, 4. Sorry, Councillor Ellie, what was your hand? It was against. Okay, so the motion is lost. Those in favour? Councillor Tolte, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Gleeson, those against? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay, Councillor Boglari. And I have the casting vote. Yes? Okay. Okay, I just got to remind all councillors of item number 10, material personal interest and conflict of interest. Councillors are reminded of their responsibilities under the Local Government Act 2009 in relation to a councillor's material personal interest or conflict of interest about a matter to be discussed at a meeting, and a summary of responsibilities are included in the agenda. Number 11, reports to council, the Office of the CEO. Yep. Do I have a mover for 11.1.1, adoption of the asset management? Councillor Mitchell. Do I have a seconder for that one? Councillor Edwards. Councillor Mitchell, would you like to talk to that? Or the officer is here. You're prepared to talk to? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, through you, the Chair. Asset management project plan is certainly well supported by, I think, council officers and the councillors. We're all fairly well in line on this one. The goal is the assets of the city and the city council, the things that we own, are kept in good shape and fit for purpose now and into the future. It's not that Redland City Council hasn't had asset management plans. This is just part of the ongoing maturity of developing an asset management plan that is fit for purpose into the future. So I think we're in good shape and moving forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Was this a for or a comment? Question?
Do we have a second of that?
Yep.
That's all second up.
Yep.
No, it was just a question. The CFO was asked to prepare a few words on this, and I thought that might have been up first.
I did check with Deb this morning, and I was going to. Yep. So is everyone happy now for the officer to. Thank you, Deb, if you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through you to councillors, good morning. It gives me great pleasure to have the opportunity to talk to the asset management project. So I'll be brief because I know that we've touched on this before. As we know in our corporate plan at Redland City Council and also in our operational plan, it talks to council's asset management to achieve the best asset service management plans, and I think we touch on that in our corporate plan, that will guide not only our project planning but also our service delivery. We need to ensure that we not only have the right system of asset management, but we also have the right asset management system. So I don't want anyone to think I'm being flippant and having a catchy strap line there, but what I mean by that is that it's not only about purchasing a new system, should the project think that's a desired outcome, but it's really about cementing how we do asset management at Redland City Council. So, for example, when we launched this with not only ELT but OLG, and then you may recall I spoke to councillors on the 25th of January, we talked about how we really need to ensure we have not only an asset management strategy that now aligns to our corporate plan and our operational plan, but we also have the governance piece. So the report that we're tabling today is not only to say here's our asset management project plan that we've seen before and we've endorsed, but really to say, and now we want to, as part of that plan, start implementing a lot of the products. And one of the products is really to get your endorsement today and that we can go away and get a governance mandate. So we really need to have a framework of asset management at Redland City Council. We need to ensure council officers understand their responsibilities, how we go about asset management, what our asset management culture is, and really what the policy position is, what the framework is, and it's a big change management piece. So we know that asset management, even though I'm lucky enough to be the project sponsor, it's certainly not a finance function. It's very much an entity-wide project that has a lot of touch points in the business with people that own and deliver assets. I'm proud that I report on the numbers, but it's very much more than the numbers. So I was asked yesterday to ensure that I can talk to how it aligns to the PMO. So we've got a PMO project methodology and portfolio methodology. The asset management project has run through that. So we have a PRINCE2 methodology that we're doing with the asset management project. There's lots of methodologies, but the one we've chosen is aligned to what we're doing with the PMO. We have used all the governance and the tools generated by the PMO, and it's lodged in the P3 portal. So should any council officers or councillors wish to have a look at the highlight reports, they're all there for you in the P3 portal. We are going to ensure that there is congruence between the asset management project and the PMO all the way down the track, and the PMO director is part of the asset management project. So hope that covers off on what I was asked yesterday, and happy to take questions. Okay, I know her passion oozes through the microphone, and it's wonderful. That's why we trust you so much with all of this work. The CEO would just like to have a comment.
So, councillors, also just to build on what Deb said, but to rewind, just to give you a degree of confidence, you will remember this project did have a genesis a while back, and it was paused, and I pulled the pin, if you like to put that, or paused the project, which is, again, a good and healthy sign for the organisation that we had the first phase of asset management probably going down a path that we didn't want to end up heading. The costs were escalating well out of control, and it got bigger than Ben-Hur. So again, our project monitoring and the due diligence put across there. So we've had that pause, we've now refocused, and I would just like to echo Deb's. From my external experience, the process that we are going here and the plan that you are going to adopt and the governance model is one of the best. And the team that we have in place and Tony Rogers being the new project manager will certainly keep it on track. And so, again, I just wanted to bring that out. If there was going to be a question around the previous model, was we probably got a little bit out of control in the sense of that. But at the same time, we didn't spend a whole heap of money. So it was a very small amount of money. We were able to stop the project early, refocus, use a lot of the work that was done, so there was no wastage in that.
Thank you. Councillor Bishop and Councillor Hughes.
Thank you very much. I just want to echo the work that the officers have done and how important this is. I mean, I can't for a second begin to admit that I'm across every single aspect of this, neither should I be, but I think it's really important that we've got the CFO talking about how all the infrastructure that we have in Redland City aligns with the management plan, and I think what's most important is that it ties into the Portfolio Management Office, which will centralise a place where councillors can see the same thing the officers are seeing, and we can all know as a city where the ratepayer dollars are going and why they're going into those areas. So I totally endorse a streamlined approach that brings clarity for us all and helps us to strategise the future planning for the city. So thanks very much to officers, and I think it comes at a good time, particularly also with Officer Peter Best in charge of a lot of that infrastructure. It's great to have you here and the team working together in that regard. So thanks very much. A lot of confidence in this particular report.
Thank you. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you. Through you, Deputy Mayor, my question to my CFO. Regarding the risk management, sitting in the audit report we had last week, I'd like to ask you to clarify CIT09 under risk management on page 5, just dealing, we've got a timeline here, and I just question that we're on track. I see we've got a very, very tight timeline, and for anyone with the report of the timeline is on page 38, and I did hear you reference that as a risk, and I'd like to have your assurance or your confirmation on how we're going with the timelines. Thank you.
To you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your question, Councillor. You're spot on. What we talked last week at Audit Committee is that I'm heading up a project that's evolutionary and not revolutionary. So that what that means in plain language is we're really trying to get the buy-in from the business with the 1,000 colleagues that we work with, and we need to understand what we're doing with asset management. So to parachute in consultants and contractors that will do an asset management project to us and on us probably won't have a long-term sustainable outcome. No disrespect to previous approaches if that's the way it was taken. So we're trying to have this evolutionary process, and that does come at a risk because we know that we have colleagues in the business that have full-time jobs. So what we need to do, both as an executive team and then as an organisation, is build that capacity in our people so that they can take time to work on the project. I'm very fortunate that on the board with me for the project is my colleague sitting on my right, so the General Manager of Infrastructure and Operations, and we've also asked that the CIO, the Chief Information Officer, sits on the board. So we've got not only the senior supplier but the senior user along with myself as the project sponsor. So in terms of are we on track, my CEO tasked me that we have a project plan out by Christmas. You will recall that was sent before Christmas. You'll recall that we talked about it on the 25th of January, and I'm mindful that not all councillors might have attended that mayor-councillor session, and that's why we've been proud enough to table it today for formal and public adoption. So it is a timeline, councillor. So in terms of the size of the project team, there are two people on the project. They're both employees. They're not consultants or contractors. So they're paid alongside myself on council employee under the EBA, but we will do the best, and ELT has noted that it's very much a entity-wide project, and it's certainly not a CFO or a finance project. So happy to keep reporting on how we're tracking.
I'm going to be a little bit more pointed. That is one of the reasons we put Deb in charge of it, to keep us on track and risk. If there's anyone in our organisation, and all of us are very competent, I do that. Noting that no project is without risks and those sort of things, but again, just to go back to Councillor Bishop's comment, now with the PMO getting in full swing, a lot more visibility, a lot more ownership, and just the structure that Deb has got and the key players on that governance group or the guiding group in there will be a big help to make this project go on track. But again, you know, the process is in place, and I'm not saying it's going to be perfect. We may have some project slips, but that'll be well reported and brought forward to council should it materially impact the schedule or the outcomes. So again, Councillor Hughes, great question, but we are now in a much better position than we were before, and I'm confident that whilst risks still exist, we have the governance structure and the performance in place to drive it forward.
Councillor Bishop.
Thank you. It's just a new matter in relation to this. One of the challenges going forward that we've had is measuring the financial sustainability ratio, which has often been contested and questioned as whether it's a useful measure. I think one of the things that this allows us to do is have a very clear sense of what it is that we're mapping and measuring, and it gives us more granularity and more clarity going forward. So hopefully it will be, I've certainly been someone who's been supporting this trajectory because it does give us more certainty about our future planning and strategy. So thank you, just acknowledging that.
Councillor Elliott.
I was wondering, just adding to it, we could maybe have a book of acronyms too that the public could share and we could find out too. There's a lot of things there, short things that public need to know sometimes, and I think thank you.
So we're suggesting an acronym at the back, but there's also some amazing amazing coloured flowcharts and tables for those of us who like the visual flowcharts.
Look, Councillor, your point is noted, but for the member of public and anyone that views this, not only will we make sure that we have that, but if you'd like to, there is on the back. Deb's now showing me. But if you ever want to Google any of these things, there is a world of information on asset management, project management, prints to risk management. Go for it, enjoy it, and again, have fun.
Fill in your weekend for you, Councillor Elliott. So just before I go back to Peter, I'd also just like to thank Deb and her team. This is a piece of work that we've been waiting for, and it's definitely going to help us with our bottom line moving forward. So please convey to the rest of the team as well. Our grateful thanks from the councillors, because this is what we needed. And Councillor Mitchell, I'll pass back to you.
Very brief summaries. I think the project is evolving. It's moving in the right direction. Got a lot of support throughout the organisation with the councillors, and generally very positive. So well done, everyone. Lots of work to do into the future, though.
Yep. Thanks. Okay, I put the motion. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. So then we'll move on to 11.1.2, monthly financial reports. Can I have a mover for that motion? Thank you. Councillor Mitchell, can I have a seconder? Councillor Edwards, back to you, Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to talk to the motion at all?
I'll just very brief for mine. I'm always heartened when I read the financial reports that the bones and the scaffolding underneath our finances remain in good shape. There's body blows that come and go, but underneath it, yeah, we've got some great bedrock. We hear talk about we're trying to deliver our capital works, and we keep trying to hit those targets, and that's an ongoing challenge, but the organisation's trying to deliver a great number there, and also to better use our reserves, our cash reserves. So, and while they're high, that's been recognised, and how to use them better into the future is also a key part of what we're all trying to do. So, with that. Yeah.
Thank you. Is there any other further? Yes, Councillor Edwards.
Just 2 points. I just want to point out that originally when we did the annual budget, we thought we'd be at this point in time about $7 million in deficit, and we're $10 million in surplus, so that's $7, $8 million turnaround. That's a really good effort. The other thing I would like to note too is that whilst the capital works expenditure has fallen behind target, that's probably the best delivery I've seen here in a number of years, the amount that they're achieving. So it's a bit of a task in front of the organisation with the works ahead of us, but I just think the delivery of capital works this year has been well done.
Yeah, can I ask? Oh, sorry, you're going to make the comment.
Oh, you can ask both. But okay. Councillor, look, I will put a note of caution on there. Yes, thank you for the wonderful comments. We do need to get better with our forecasting. Whilst the $17 million swing is a very positive thing, we do need to get better with our forecasting. That is something that we're working with. Do also acknowledge and pay recognition to Peter and the team on the capital program. It is the best delivery so far, also in my 4 years. And also I have a much greater confidence now that Peter and his team are getting that well and truly under control. You'll see at the budget review, the give-ups, the timings and everything, Peter's done extensive work to give you a much better position in that. And it is also pointed out at this stage that there is the $11 million which was in there with the SIF funding, which is delayed this year because, again, we always knew it would be a stretch for us to get that funding through and for councillors to make those decisions. And I do also note that that will be reviewed by councillors moving forward around its appropriateness, etc. But, again, a great result for the team, noting that we do have to get better on forecasting, and I know Deb drives that each month with us, and I know my executive team is right behind that, getting that visibility down through the organisation so that we can position ourselves best to utilise the money. And just on the reserves as well, being noted in there, yes, they are high. Yes, they need to be spent over time and the programs that we are doing. But again, remembering that reserves just for the general public, that money is not held just because we enjoy it. It is held for specific tasks, and we need to make sure that we apply those appropriately. And there is an increased due diligence being provided through the finance team in conjunction with our operational teams to make sure that that work can be achieved in an appropriate time frame.
Deb, did you have anything you'd like to add to that? I saw you put your hand towards the button before. That was all. I thought you might have had a...
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, just delighted that we're getting the airtime, so more than happy to keep the conversation running. Without trying to put a disclaimer on like a true professional, I think worth noting that this is at the end of the eighth period of the year. So, yes, we are tracking well, and we were $4 million operating ahead of the operating surplus, but that final year-end position of the $7.4 million deficit, operating deficit, may still crystallise. So I think it's very much we'll keep track as an executive team and certainly with the officers and that, but I think there's still a lot more work to do, as I know that Peter on my right will attest to. There's a lot more that we want to deliver and a lot more that we want to achieve this year, so we've still got four more periods as at the end of this report, so we may see some movement in that operating surplus deficit. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you again through you, Deputy Mayor. To Peter Best, thanks. We've been talking about this Capital Works project, and we realise that we're doing very well. However, when residents or when the public are looking at this, we are and have fallen a little bit behind. Would you be able to update us, thanks? Is there a reason why we've fallen behind, in particularly this last month? Have you got some big projects coming through that's going to see us with a spike next month? Where are we up to, thanks?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor, the depth of your question, I'd have to take it on notice and provide you that information, if that's all right.
Okay, if there's no further questions or comments, I'll pass back to Peter to sum up and put the motion.
Yes, very briefly. In summary, I think it's very heartening that finance never sleeps, and neither should it when it's dealing with public money. I think Deb's whole team, knowing Deb, are all on no-dos when they're needed. But yeah, but we're dealing with public money, and so it is a serious business. The business of finance and the hygiene of the organisation financially is very serious business, and we all take it. So very grateful to everyone, and with that, yes, just like to move the motion.
Thank you. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. So we'll now move on to Community and Customer Service, 11.2.1. Okay, moved Councillor Bishop. Is there a seconder? Councillor Hughes. Back to you, Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just to note the decisions made under delegated authority for Categories 1, 2 and 3 developments that have been made over the past few weeks, and just like to move that motion.
Was there any further comments or queries on that? No? Councillor Hughes?
Just a question on Category 1 decisions, 26 to the second, on the division, very bottom operational works, Pride Fabrications, there was a number missing on that. It was Division 3, bottom of your page. And I thought you were going to clarify that, sorry.
Councillor Golley?
Just for noting.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Yesterday I took the liberty of contacting officers to get clarification around that. It was zoned a particular way previously. All it was a zoning rechange so that I believe pipes could be put in for drainage, etc. It's nothing major. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for that. Councillor Bishop, you're wanting to sum up?
Nothing further to add. I think it's all in the report and business as usual with the delegation to the officers. Thank you.
Thank you. On that note, I'll put the motion. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. Sorry. I now move on to 11.2.2, the Planning and Environment Court Matters List current at the 9th of March. Can I have a mover, please? Yep. Councillor Bishop. Can I have a seconder? Councillor Hughes. Councillor Bishop, would you like to talk to that?
Thank you, Madam Deputy Mayor. This is the Planning and Environment Court Matters as at the 9th of March. And notice that the purpose of the report is just for Council to note the current appeals that are in process. I'd like to move that report.
Thank you. Were there any questions or comments from councillors? No? So Councillor Bishop has put the motion. So all in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. So then we move on to number 11.2. Sorry. Then we move on to 11.2.3, request to extend the relevant period for the biomass power plant at 70 to 96 Hillview Road, Mount Cotton. Do I have a mover? Oh, sorry, Councillor Hughes, yes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to declare a possible material personal interest. My spouse stands to gain an indirect benefit or loss from the decision of the meeting, and he is an employee of one of the companies vying for the project and has been involved in the tender process. I will now leave the meeting room and be in my office whilst this matter is considered. Thank you.
Was there anybody else who... Okay. So we'll just wait for Councillor Hughes to leave the room. Thank you. Okay, so I'll call for a mover. Councillor Tolte and a seconder. Councillor Edwards. And I'll pass back to you, Councillor Tolte. Did we want the officer to present first? Before? Yep. Okay. David, over to you then.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, councillors. The item before councillors today is a request to extend an existing approval. It was an approval given back in 2007, and I'm just going to run through a brief presentation which really summarises the report, the matters for consideration before you make your decision. So the subject site is Lot 2 on RP 30611, and it's at 70 to 96 Hillview Road, Mount Cotton. The zoning for the site is conservation and rural non-urban. The site contains a number of overlays, including bushfire, habitat protection, extractive resources, flood storm and drainage constrained land, landslide hazard, protection of the poultry industry and waterways and wetlands of Moreton Bay. The site's been used for poultry farming for several decades and currently accommodates four poultry sheds, a residential dwelling and a mobile phone tower. The site is accessed from Hillview Road and the surrounding area is predominantly rural in nature, with the Golden Cockerel chicken processing plant located to the east of the site. There is a park residential estate on the eastern side of Mount Cotton Road. Mount Cotton State School is approximately 800 metres to the northeast. So we've just got an aerial view of the site on the screen there, which gives you the site in context. And the next slide shows us the zoning. So split rural and conservation. The area in which the plant is proposed to be located is actually in the rural non-urban zone part of the site. So the proposal involves the operation of a power plant fueled by chicken litter. It comprises the power generator, chimney, dry fluid coolers, storage hall and associated car parking. The proposal includes the burning of chicken waste supply from poultry farms, and that provides electricity to the adjoining, it's proposed to provide electricity to the adjoining Golden Cockerel processing plant and to the grid. The infrastructure will replace the existing large rectangular poultry growing shed, which we saw on the aerial photograph, which has been removed. And the plant is to have a throughput of approximately 66,000 tonnes of chicken litter per year. It's proposed to operate continuously, and this will involve continuous monitoring of temperature and velocity at the stack exit. And the proposal is anticipated to entail 15 truck movements per day or 105 per week. The fuel storage hall is approximately 11 metres in height above existing ground level and roughly 3,000 square metres in area. Maximum litter storage is roughly 700 tonnes, which is 4 days of fuel at any one time. The power generation and distribution and pollution control equipment occupies an area of approximately 2,000 square metres. And the height of the fuel storage hall with chimney extends to 30 metres. Through conditions imposed by the state government, power generation is restricted to approximately 5 megawatts of electricity. And emissions will be released to the air via a bag house filter, lime dosing system, 30 metre high stack. Waste ash will be cooled and collected for reuse by licensed transporters, waste transporters, and disposal of waste heat is proposed via a dry fluid cooling system. And we see on the screen there the proposal plans. These are the plans from 2007, which were subsequently updated by court judgment in 2013. So that gives you an overview of the development. To give you the background to the development and the process that led us to where we are today, the original application was lodged back in 2004. On 2007, a development permit was given by the council of the day. We subsequently had a submitter appeal against that approval by the council. And through the appeal process, the court provided a judgment approving the development in 2007. That approval had a four-year currency period, so that required the development to commence prior to 2011. Before the approval lapsed, the applicant requested an extension to the approval through council. The council of the day in 2011 resolved to refuse that request for an extension. That was then a subject of an appeal to the Planning and Environment Court. And in the course of the appeal over 2012 and into 2013, the appellant, as they were at the time, made a change to the approved development through the court to resolve some anomalies within the approval that was given in 2007. The court also in 2013 agreed to an extension to the approval through to 2015. The development approval still wasn't implemented by the proponent, and in 2015 council received another request to extend the approval. That was approved by council in 2015, and in considering that extension in 2015, council had regard to the judgment of the Planning and Environment Court back in 2013 because the judgment included matters relevant when considering further extension requests. So the approval that Council gave in 2015 to extend was to run until September 2016. And in September 2016, the applicant requested a third extension to the approval through to July 2018. And that's the matter before Council today. Council was due to consider this matter back in December 2016, and it was on the agenda for that general meeting. Just prior to the meeting, the applicant requested that Council defer its decision because the applicant advised that they were considering potential design changes. Council agreed to that deferral through to March this year, and the applicant confirmed just recently that they won't be undertaking any changes to the approved design, and they've requested Council to make a decision on this extension request. So turning then to the decision that Council has to make today. So the extension, in summary, is an extension through to July 2018, so just over a year from now. And in making a decision on that request for the extension, Council has to consider four things. Council has to consider the consistency of the approval, including its conditions, with current laws and policies applying. Council has to consider the community's current awareness of the approval and whether, if Council refused the request to extend, further rights to make a submission would be available and the likely extent to which those rights would be exercised. And the fourth item that Council must consider in deciding this request is the views of any concurrence agency for the approval. In this particular case, the concurrence agency is the Department of Environment and Heritage Protection, and crucially, they consider matters relevant to the environmentally relevant activity. So those are the four things that Council must consider. So stepping through those four items, in terms of current laws and policies, it's probably crucial to note that in 2007 it was determined that this approval was consistent with laws and policies as they were back then. That matter was retested through the appeal in 2012 into 2013, and it was determined that the approval was consistent with current laws and policies then. Between 2013 and 2017, there have been no changes to laws and policies applying to this form of development, and we would say that the approval remains consistent with current laws and policies. In particular, we would say it remains consistent with the regional plan, state planning policies, state planning regulatory provisions, the current planning scheme, and infrastructure contributions are either consistent or can be made consistent through applying additional charges. On the matter of community awareness and potential submitters, we note that if the application were remade, there would be further rights available to submitters. A new application would be impact assessable. It's considered the community is aware of the proposal, and if an application were relodged, we would receive a large number of submissions. However, the previous judgment of the Planning and Environment Court noted that in their judgment, if new submissions were received, it's unlikely they would raise any new matters that weren't considered previously. And the court crucially considered that the proposal was consistent with current laws and policies. The judgment of the court back in 2013 also notes that some members of the community may not be aware of this proposal, this approval, but there should be an expectation from residents moving into the area after the approval was given that this form of development might occur in this area. The order then goes on to state that there would be no benefit or utility in forcing an application to go through a process for an approval to begin for the same form of development. Now, Council is bound to consider that judgment from the Planning and Environment Court in making its decision on this request, because the court considered those same four matters that council has to consider today. And that judgment essentially adds case law to statute law and is relevant to council's consideration. I will note that we have, you know, without going into detail, received legal advice in terms of the assessment, and that has assisted in forming the officer recommendation to councillors. As I note, the state have considered the request for an extension, and in particular, their jurisdiction relates to environmental matters, and the state has approved or raised no objection to the extension being given, and that's part of council's consideration today. So, summing up, the matter before council is a request to extend the approval through to July next year. The officer's recommendation is that the request should be approved for the reasons that we've outlined today. Council's options are to adopt the recommendation to approve or to resolve to refuse the request.
Thank you, David, for that summary. I've just got to backtrack. I mistook when Councillor Tolte put her hand up. She actually was moving the motion. She was actually putting it up for a query or something. So I'm just asking, Councillor Tolte, are you happy to withdraw for moving that motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. Councillor Elliott, you actually had your hand up at that time. Are you?
Yeah, I was just getting ready.
Going to move an alternate. Yeah. Okay, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. The officer recommendation on the. Okay, I'd like to move that the officer recommend one. The officer recommendation not be accepted. Is that up there yet? Yeah. Okay. I'll read this out for the benefit of the community. That the officer recommendation not be accepted. Two, that the request to extend the relevant period of the biomass power plant undefined use and ERA number 17 on the land known as 70 to 96 Hillview Road, Mount Cotton, be refused on the following grounds. A, that the now population of Mount Cotton, its surrounds and Redland City itself have grown significantly since the original application was lodged in June 2004 and the first approval for the plant was in March 2007. A number of new estates and chains of ownership in Mount Cotton, Thornlands, Victoria Point and Redland Bay have been established in this time. Therefore, there was a fair degree of non-awareness of the development approval within the surrounding community, which is evidenced by the following. The latest public notification period, and stand corrected any time, for the development application was in 2005, which means over 12 years have passed. A number of key elements of the development changed since the time of the latest public notification, including the burner and the cooling system. Therefore, there would be clearly no or limited awareness within the community of the final characteristics of the development. B, that the applicant has failed to deliver on condition 9.1 and 9.2 in the February 2013 court order regarding the social issues management. And C, the extension will remove the rights to make submissions for a further development application which will be applicable should the request be refused.
Do I have a seconder for that motion? Councillor Bishop. Back to...
Just move into...
For and against then, or I was going to ask, did you want to move into an informal discussion? No, is that... Yeah, do you want to do that and have a motion, or do you want to stay in for and against formal?
Well, it's...
Stay informal?
Yes, I don't think there's going to be huge debate back and forth.
Okay.
Can I... Well, that was just me moving it sort of thing.
Yep.
I want to talk to it. Can I talk to it?
Yep.
All right, thank you. Thanks, David, for the... I think that outlined it quite well. It is a significant, as being in the power industry, 5 to a 7.5 megawatt of electricity. It's quite a big unit that would be in there. I'm not going to talk about, bar that, about the actual plant and the approval of the plant and things like that. However, the I'm very, as I said in the thing in my opening address, the time has moved on. I think it's very much so, as I've stated, there's a lot more people in the community. This is Redlands has grown. This isn't just an isolated community out in the back blocks. Redlands community is surrounding this, and there'd be a lot of people out there would not know. And I'm a bit amused sometimes because it's not the first thing I do when I was buying a house is there a biomass plant being built up the road. I think it's... I remember years ago, a former GM actually mentioned about going on holidays. First thing he did was work out what time the sprinkler hours were. And I thought that was unusual. It's something I've never done when I go on holidays. But certainly, time has moved on. I think it's time the community had another say. I certainly don't want to put any applicant through a long and detailed assessment. And if they've got all their stuff, hey, come back again. Let the community have a say across the city. We're far more informed these days. We have Facebook, which I don't have, but we have Facebook and all these other interactive things where sometimes you get facts and sometimes you don't, but at least there'd be a more spread thing of what is actually going on. I'll move on to the social issues management, and this was in the 2013 deliberate. This was the court order from the judge on the 28th of 2nd, 2013. 9.1. The applicant must establish and maintain the operation of a community liaison group to facilitate the effective management of the social issues associated with the development. This group must be chaired by the operator of the plant, consist of representatives from Redland Shire Council, the Environmental Protection Agency, interested community groups and individuals. Operated under a terms of reference that's founded on the accuracy and transparency, enable open transfer of information between all parties, enables issues and problems to be raised for consideration and response. Established prior to the development works commencing and convened on a regular basis. 9.2 is prior to the associated development works approval, the applicant must submit to council details that demonstrate how condition 9.1 is planned to be achieved. Now, I understand that was started. Councillor Talty, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Councillor Talty was a member of that committee, but she did resign from that committee. I can't remember the time, and I'll leave that up to her. But in 2013, if they've set the committee up, and I don't know what the date, I don't know if there's any minutes. I've checked this morning, as late as this morning at 8 o'clock, I looked on Cleveland Power's website. There is, in community, it just talks about the unit itself. In the blog, it's about them, not about the community. There's no, you can't, it appears you can't write into it, but certainly not. And I would have thought, in the report of the 20th March 2015, on the last renewal, the page 3 of 13, the applicant states the biomass plants are well established in Europe and North America, but they remain something of a novelty in Australia. The factors contribute to the difficulties in obtaining funding in Australia to pursue the development approval, and the funding has been sought offshore. It has been taking longer than expected to seek the relevant funding, hence the second request for an extension to the relevant period. The applicant states they've executed a funding agreement in February 2014 and access to the funds is now anticipated. I would say if you've got that, you would have had your community going. You would be talking to the community one-on-one. There is no evidence that's happened to date. It was started. I congratulate if they started it before they got going, but as I understand from conversation I had, and Councillor Telty alluded to, a shed was removed, and I don't know if that's operational works or if it's just a shed's been removed, where the site of this would be. But certainly, I have... this has been going on and on and on, and I think the community need to be engaged. It's a condition that was set by the court, and it appears to me, and I'm quite happy to be, I've got egg on my face, that it hasn't happened. It's started, but it's failed to. And I think on the last, it says convened on a regular basis. So I'm interested to hear if that's happened. Anyway, that's,
Thank you. I was just seeing if there's any clarification that we can get on the community group through David or Andrew. Thank you, David.
I'll just respond on the conditions. So the conditions require the establishment of that group, and the trigger for that to occur is they have to give us the details prior to operational works approval. The advice I've got is that we haven't received an operational works application. Removing the shed would have been building work as opposed to operational work. So... from our perspective, they haven't met the trigger for the condition coming into play. Now, they may have commenced it previously, but in terms of us requiring compliance, we would be looking at the condition, and they haven't reached it yet.
Thank you, David, for that clarification. I would still be pushing that, but, that they did start it, and I think in probably goodwill to the community, they started it, but it ran out of steam. But I think once you've started it, I think, and included a community and a councillor on that board, I'd say it should continue to run. I think it's a moral obligation by the company to continue that until the process is completed. Thank you.
Is there a speaker for? The motion that's on the board now. We did a seconder, didn't we? We've done the seconder with Councillor Bishop, and we're now going into formal. So I'm right going for?
Yeah.
Yay, I'm right for once. There you go. For? Councillor? You were just a comment. You were just a summing up. Okay, we're going against then. I wasn't right. Anyone against? Thank you. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Look, I don't think as a councillor in the room that it's not concerned about residents' views, and we've all heard them, and we've all heard the emails and received them, but for my mind, I have to remove the idea of what the approval is based on and just stick to the facts, and the facts is about extending a current approval, which had been refused and upheld by the Planning Environment Court previously. One of the items that are up there in the proposed motion said that the reference to the change to the stacks, which was upheld by the Planning Court as well, they acknowledged those changes and they accepted them. I don't see how we can win if this is appealed, if a refusal is appealed, how we can win. I'm really concerned about wasting ratepayers' money. I'm not saying whether I'm for or against the approval. I certainly voted against the extension last time. But I'm really concerned that we can't win an appeal and what that's going to cost ratepayers. So I guess I would have a question to our legals as to possible outcomes if a refusal is given today. Maybe best possible scenario and worst possible scenario. Please.
I might try and answer that, Councillor Gleeson. It's one of those loaded questions. We did have some, and again, it's always an interesting one when you have legal professional privilege in the thing. Again, I think you've seen the officer's recommendations that we believe that based on the four tests that was there, so that is the officer's recommendation. So the Planning Court would take that into consideration around the officer's recommendation. You've also had an alternate motion put up there and some reasons, so the test of reasons being valid in that sort of sense is in that. That'll be up for the court to test. I think you could take it either way, really. I mean, I'm sorry, Paul, Councillor Gleeson, it's a very vexed discussion in there, but if you take the worst-case scenario that the power company appeals it goes to the court. Worst case scenario is if the court deems they're there because of the way the approach is, we may be awarded costs and have to pay both the appealants and our own costs. So that's the worst case. Best case scenario is the court rules that the refusal was appropriate. We would wear our own costs and the appealer would wear their own. I think that's a fair sum. So again, we can't judge and provide advice other than we've already given you some of that advice, and I would sorry if I'm seeming nervous, it's probably just trying to not dance over the legal privilege line. So we have given that in confidence to the councillors on what we believe is the prospects, but again, that's up to you to weigh up. So again, that's the role of local government, is to do it, and we think that the test of there are valid planning reasons or given through Council Elliott for the refusal, officers share a different view.
Thanks, Bill. Madam Chair, my heart says one thing and my head says the other. I'm going to stick with my head. I don't see how we can win an appeal based on the facts and the evidence. I won't be supporting the alternative motion. I'll be sticking with the officer's recommendation. Thank you.
If I may, through you, Deputy Chair, it's one of those days, I think. Councillor Edwards, I just need to confirm, I did see you nod your head that you supported the withdrawal of the original motion from Council Tolte. Can we just confirm on the record that you do, in fact, withdraw that original motion? Can you raise your hands just so that we're absolutely clear? Thank you.
Councillor Tolt, is that a comment on?
Comment. When
yep,
you're ready.
On that one. Councillor Bishop, were you a for or a comment? A for. Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Deputy Mayor, and thanks to the officers, and also to the developers proposing what I think commenced at a time in 2004 as a potential solution that I think has captured attention and is merit worthy in having done so at a time when we know that management of electricity and production of such is something that we want to try and look at diversification. And I know that the context in which this decision needs to be made means that things have changed. I'll come back to that in a moment, over the last 13 years. I want to speak in favour of this proposed motion and note that under Section 388 of SPAR, it states that in deciding this request, the assessment manager, at the moment councillors, must only have regard to the following. And those are the 4 points that David Jean's officer for planning has gone through with us. It does mean that some of the broader considerations of council, of residents, need to sit to one side. I very much want to support the words that have been drafted in collaboration with some councillors, in discussion with officers that are defensible, I believe. And I want to bring into this decision the fact that 13 years ago, when this was first proposed, so much has changed. The certainty of developing and delivering a plant which could have been on the ground, which could have given a very clear signal to residents that there is, in fact, a biomass there, and they could have been buyer beware. The reality of that not having appeared over the last 13 years is quite different to the potential for it. And I think we need to acknowledge the context of this decision and be aware of those broader matters, and I think we need to vote with the community and the heart as elected representatives in mind. My head says that these grounds are defensible. The CEO has just confirmed that, and I think we need to bring to the table our elected...
Point of order, Madam Chair.
I'll retract that.
I don't think the CEO's
I'll retract that. That may have been me mishearing that. But I do believe that these grounds are defensible, and I'll remain consistent with my view when asked previously that I feel as though the time has come and gone, and I think it's appropriate that it goes back to the community for a reviewed application that looks at things like how much fuel in terms of chicken litter there is in the region, and whether that is this is the best proposed way forward. And I believe that this time has passed and that this should not be supported, so I support the proposed motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Is there a speaker against the motion that's before us on the screen at the moment? If not, I'm going to open up to questions or comments. So, Councillor Mitchell, do you want to speak against the motion? Yep.
So well. Yeah, again, it's extremely difficult one, but just a request.
Sorry, your mic doesn't seem to have clicked.
Yep.
It is on?
Yep. Yep. Gotcha. At its heart, it's a request to extend the approval. It's not the merits of the biomass plant or the alternative energy plant that's up for discussion, and that doesn't mean it's not important. It just means that's not what we're here for today. It's not the merits of the biomass or health issues that are out for discussion. That's for the state and others. I think our internal experts and also the rulings of the P&E court before have very mindful of those. But the reasons for refusal that Councillor Elliott put on are probably fairly thin at best. All the advice is telling us so. I'll have to stick with my head today and won't be supporting the alternate motion.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Is there a speaker for the motion? Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm going to support Councillor Elliott's motion here today. In the lead up to this decision today, I know that we received a lot of emails from the community, but I've also received a lot of phone calls, and I'm glad that Councillor Elliott has pointed out Dornlands, Victoria Point and Redland Bay, because most of my calls came from those areas. A lot of people weren't aware, the people that contacted me, a lot of people weren't aware that this was even going on at Mount Cotton. And it's not only the demographic that's changed and the community and the population has increased dramatically down the southern end of the Redlands. It's also the technology that runs this sort of process. I mean, I want to know more about... I was just at a business workshop this morning. They're talking about digital and computers and the changing worlds. I mean, some of these technologies are changing by 10, 20, 30 factors per year. And I'm just a little concerned that we went back and when they went through the original extension and they said, we're looking at changing the design, they came back and said, no, we're going to proceed with the current design. I think we're at that point. This has been such a protracted approval that we need to go back to the community and give them the opportunity. Like, I really support renewable energy. I think it's a great thing. But there's a lot of questions. People are asking me, what's coming out in that smoke out of the chimney? Is it going to smell? What are the byproducts? How many trucks? I'm getting all these questions. A lot of them I can't answer. And that's what concerns me. And interestingly, if you look at our community engagement policy in December 2016, which is only a few months ago, the Redlands 2030 community plan was added as a supporting document. And what it says in that document is inclusive and ethical government's goal, broad, rich and deep engagement. Important decisions in Redlands are routinely based on respectful engagement with the community, including the underrepresented voices, through creative and traditional engagement activities and consultative mechanisms. And that's why I'm going to support this motion, because I think we need to go back to the drawing board and reconsult this whole project. Thank you.
Is there a speaker against the motion? If not, I'll open up to comments and questions, and Councillor Tolte's been waiting patiently, and then I'll get to you, Councillor Gleeson, then Councillor Golly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel very privileged, as I'm sure all the councillors around this room do, to come from my particular community and the broader community of Redland. My community through the last few weeks has been just amazing in the way that they have stepped forward. If they weren't aware of it, they didn't immediately jump to conclusions, despite a great deal of misinformation and rumour that was being put out in the community for reasons that are not necessarily clear. And many members of my community came forward and wanted to know the fors and against. They wanted to understand what it was. Many of them have moved into the area in the last 5 or 6 years and have not been aware of the project. Many of them became aware of the project because of fearful rumours about the impacts that the plant may have, particularly on their children. But they didn't immediately. These are smart, well-educated, modern families, and they didn't immediately jump to that conclusion that that information was necessarily correct. They came forward and they asked for more information, and I have endeavoured to provide that to everyone that has asked. I was fortunate that I did go and ask Cleveland Power to come to the park last Saturday for those parents that were concerned, and they did come through and they did do that, and I appreciated that very much. And they came and they provided answers for 2 hours solid to questions that were put forward, and I thought that was very good of them to step up. As Councillor Elliott mentioned, there was a community consultative committee commenced. I'd have to look up the years because they seem to have rolled on through 2013 into 2014. I did resign from that committee because it became apparent at the point of the last application for extension that the plans that had been put forward, and I don't mean plans as in technical engineering drawings, I mean the timeline that had been provided for what was intended had changed, and the consultative committee was not aware of that, and we were not across it, and I felt that they could have, that was information that they could have distributed to us, and they didn't. I gather, and I'm not a member of that committee anymore, so I have no further information on whether that committee has met since then. I'm very concerned as a leader within our community firstly with this decision, because I don't want this decision to cloud the expectation of the community. We have had some quite strong advice that advises that with the officer's original recommendation that this matter will more than likely move forward through the Environment Planning Court. So I would hesitate for people to find this, or people who would like this plant to not go ahead, to find a victory in whatever comes out of this motion today. I also am very concerned as a leader within our community about the kinds of statements that are made that cloud and make people feel fearful should this go forward to the Planning Environment Court and achieve a further approval. It's not helpful when people don't go and get the information as it has been provided and approved through the court, through the EPA, through the regulators. Statements just here today and assumptions here today, and I won't refer to the comments from the public gallery, but you know, just in one sentence, you know, smoke byproducts, you know, alternative methods have come forward, and all of that information, all of the answers and the actual correct information in relation to all of those things is available. I won't go through it all now, but it is there and it is able to be sourced. There are concerns within the community that this has not been well enough communicated, and I do agree with that. I think that we need to take the community on the journey with us, and they need to understand what's happening, why it's happening and how it will happen, and exactly what the implications of that are. And that has not been well communicated. So I think that there is certainly a case to answer with regard to communicating better with our community. I will support this motion today because I think that the judgment in the court will be further tested. But I'm hesitant to have that interpreted, A, as support for the fearful rumour and extreme comments that have been made about the plant that are scientifically incorrect. I don't want our community to be fearful that if this moves forward and there is an overarching concern within the community as the distrust of government, of politicians, of media at the moment, and so there is an overarching doubt in the community's mind, and we need to be able to reinforce for them that all of these agencies will be acting in their best interests and the best interests of what's good for the broader community. And we live in a time at the moment. I drove to work this morning listening to ABC Radio talking about the fact that we've had one of the hottest summers on record. While it's not the hottest summer ever, it is very, very hot, and the fact that we didn't have an El Niño effect meant that was an even more grave record for us to consider. Here we have a project that is trying to solve problems within our community, the problem of getting rid of this chicken waste. And just to make comment on the question about whether we could do methane solid waste breakdown, I've actually asked that question of the company, and they have said that that only reduces the overall bulk of what has to be dealt with down by about 40%, as I understand it, whereas the method that they've asked to go forward with reduces that to ash and is about 10% of the waste remains to be managed. When we've got a project which is proposing to provide renewable power through an award-winning system that provides enough power for our entire Mount Cotton community and the plant, you know, we have to think, well, is this sounds like it's something that we should consider when we're talking about concerns about global warming and the future of our children. But at the same time, people are very concerned about the science of it, about the design of it, and about the possible unknown consequences of it, and they're fearful. And the only way that you can help them to understand and to feel less fearful is to communicate what's going on and to communicate the science and to give them faith that you're doing that in an open, honest way. So I think that that is something that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. Councillor Gleeson, then Golay, then Edward.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I apologise to the officers for that open-ended question earlier about the potential cost going forward, but can I ask, do we have a figure of how much the last refusal cost ratepayers?
Not on me, no. The last appeal cost that went to court? Not a precise one. I believe it finished last month, so I don't know if all the costs have come in. Look, appeals aren't... Oh, this one. Oh, no, I don't have that on me. No, that was 2013.
Apples and apples, yeah.
And they're different cases, yeah.
Was that it, Councillor Gleeson? Okay. Councillor Golay. Councillor Golay?
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Councillors, please. Councillor Golay?
I sort of reflect back on what Councillor Elliott has discussed, and there's a couple of things that come to my mind, which is just due process, and that comes down to the consultation process to the current residents that are actually living here now or moving into the area now. I think if we don't support this new motion or proposed motion, and it gets knocked back, it'll only add weight to the appellant's case to take it to the appeals court. And I think it's up to the appellant to present the merits of what they want to put forward today, in this year, or next year. Because I could almost see it as over the next 12 months that we'll be sitting here again discussing a further extension. I took the liberty yesterday of contacting Mr. Bray because I thought that was the best way to actually get some answers. And I actually asked, in light of the controversy surrounding this plant, can you advise me what the challenges are that you face in the construction getting underway? His response was not anything to do with financial matters or community or etc. It was, and I quote, "The challenges have been around the uncertainty of the renewable energy market with governments constantly changing the rules."
Sorry, I'm just seeking advice whether we're allowed to quote other people when they're not present.
I think it's probably not so much that. It's really back to the relevance to the matter. So we're talking about an extension here in the commercial... So, again, Councillor, with due respect, I think the commercial elements of their proposal is not what you're debating here, and whether it is just an extension, and it's on those four matters. You have Councillor Elliott's alternate. So, again, I think Councillor Mitchell might have said it, the merits of the project are not up for discussion. So I do think you need to keep it relevant to the discussion, and I just might ask Andrew Ross out.
Thanks, Bill. And through you, Madam Chair, quite correct. I mean, councillors, you need to make your decision based on the material in the officer's report, which is the experts in this matter. I have no doubt you've listened to the community today and listened to the community in the past. That information and the expert comment is in this report, which really should be basing your decision on. To bring in other external factors now, it just creates a grey area for everybody that may not have received that information.
Thanks for that. I just thought it was relevant to go to the source and ask the relevant questions about what's actually going on. And I think, realistically, I mean, we've got a report here, yes, and if I look at the report, we've got a case here that says there's certain factors that will, you know, mitigate or escalate or whatever. The fact is we're actually relying on this report that's quite old. Realistically, it's over a transient time frame, 12 years. And I just think if we were to not approve this new motion, and we go with the officer's recommendation, we're actually adding weight in relation to evidence for the appellant that will go to a future planning environment court, because I don't believe this is going to be constructed in the next 12 months either. So I support the new proposed motion, and I think that it's done so, from my view, from the perspective that there has been quite a few residents contact me as a councillor asking to stop what we're actually doing now and have the company come forward and start the process again and put their merits forward of actually building a proposed power station out in Mount Cotton.
Madam Chair, could we just get a clarification on the possible outcomes of this? Because I'm just a bit concerned that that makes people think that this will result in a new application being lodged, and that's probably not likely.
Mm-hmm. We have clarity on that one. Thank you.
Look, all I'll do is, I know we shared some of this yesterday, just if you look at the court ruling, however you do it, Andrew, section 18, which is in your report, an assessment manager deciding on a request under section 383 of SPAR must only have regard to the four matters. So once again, we go back to that. The court will take whatever it deems appropriate, but it will be in those four matters. David, is there a better way to put that for a planning manager?
No, that's absolutely right. The decision today, as we've said, has to be based on those four tests. The outcomes would be, I guess the applicant might accept council's decision if you decide to refuse the request. They could file an appeal and seek to take that to the court for a decision. In the alternative, they could potentially lodge a new application. That would be an option available to them. And that would be assessed against the criteria, and that would be a merits assessment. It's impossible for us to speculate as to which of those options the applicant might choose to follow, and I wouldn't want to do so.
Councillor Tolte,
Is
it just on that point again?
Just to ask David, through you, Madam Chair, to just, and he may not be able to speculate, but as I understand it, because the officers have made their recommendation based on current policies and laws and the court precedent, the educated judgment is if there were a new application lodged tomorrow, exactly the same outcome would be achieved in the recommendation. Could I just get a bit more information on that?
I think I'd probably draw your attention to the judgment, the 2013 judgment, where in paragraph 25, the court said, I accept there would be little utility in forcing the developer to undergo an extensive impact assessment process, new application, for the purpose of obtaining a development approval that would be, for all intents and purposes, consistent with the existing development approval. That was the court judgment. If an application were remade today, we would be assessing against the same criteria in terms of laws and policies. And that's really what the judge was saying then. So I'm not going to prejudge the outcome of an application, but I just will draw your attention to those comments from the court.
Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. This motion is a little bit confused in some people's mind, I believe. It's not about whether biomass power plant is good or not. That's not the issue. The issue is strictly about whether there's an extension of the approval. When I went through this, I can see that the officer's recommendation is correct in my belief and how they've structured it. But there is something in my mind that keeps coming back to me that I need to question. When the decision of the courts was made in 2013, there was an extension for a couple of years. So when it came back to us in 2015, I voted for the extension. And the reason, because that with the 2 years, I think it's right that the... I'll read on page 18. The consistency of the approval with the planning documents would mean there must be a reasonable expectation from the community that development of the kind of approval may occur in the area. So in 2015, I assume that would still be the case because there would have been only a couple of years between that. Mm-hmm. But I've got a question to ask perhaps of Andrew, is that when the court formulates a decision based on this, is there a time frame they look forward to where their decision is relevant, or is it, or would it not be the case that as time progresses, that position may change because of changes within the community, demographics and other things? In other words, is their initial decision based on this saying that on that particular paragraph, so that's ad infinitum, the exact weight, or can that change in the court's mind?
Through you, Madam Chair. No, it's a point in time decision by the court. They would have to reevaluate that same test at the point that decision is made, exactly what you have to do today. And that's what the officers have done as well. So they've considered that four tests and they've put reasons behind that. They've actually considered it quite a bit of detail and actually copied the court judgment as well. But it's a point in time test. You have to consider it at that time.
Okay, thank you.
The CEO's just got...
Councillor Edwards, I think just again to put on the public record, and David, correct me if I'm wrong, it was and it is explained in there that under the same laws they haven't changed. So our planning scheme, SPA, the environmental things, the guys have been through that, the officers, that hasn't changed. So it's of their opinion that the court would, and again it's their opinion, would reach the same decision. So we have to do that. There's been no changes to those, David, and he's nodding. So that's...
Through the Chair, if I could just confirm, the judgment makes clear in a number of places that the court considered the approval to be consistent with current laws and policies, and that was part of the reason in the court giving the extension. There have been no changes to those laws and policies in the 4 years following that. And the current planning scheme will remain in effect until the new planning scheme commences. No changes to laws and policies, and in reaching this judgment, the court considered that crucial, that it was consistent.
I have no concerns with that. The only concern is in when it says such submissions would not result in any new issues not already raised by the more than 300 submissions of the original application. In my mind, I'm still trying to work it out, the length of time that has passed and the change that has happened in the area, I'm wondering whether that, as the court makes a decision and it's a point in time, whether if we look towards a point in time of 2018, is that still the case? Would they still hold that? And I mean, you can't answer that, I suppose, because that goes down. And that's the only question raised in my mind, and I know there's a financial risk to council to go down that path as well. So that was the only issue. That's just because all we're looking is not whether the power plant is good, bad, or indifferent. We're just is the extension of the period, and that was the only thing I could see that raised concern in my mind.
So, Councillor, the only other thing I would add is David didn't read the full part of that item 25. Just for the context, and that's not a criticism, David, but I accept there would be little utility in forcing the developer to undergo an extensive impact assessment process for the purpose of obtaining a development approval that would be, for all intent and purposes, consistent with the existing development approval and which would be unlikely to provoke a public submission that would raise any new issues for consideration. So it's not about the volume, it is the court was talking about issues. So I'm just reading the rest of that statement. In that, and you can make your own judgment from that.
Thank you. Is there any further comment or clarification that's needed? I'd like to speak, if that's okay, Councillor Elliott. Thank you. Just this once. Okay. This has been a very passionate and emotive issue ever since I got into council in 2008, and I have voted on it numerous times, and I've been very consistent in my voting on it. It's been 13 years since this application first came to council. If this extension was to be approved today, the new, and there's many residents of that surrounding areas, and as Councillor Hewlett has said, even Victoria Point, and over the last few days I've had residents from Ormiston phone me, it would prevent all these new residents from making submissions and actually learning what is going on.
The 2011 report states the degree of non-awareness is evident by, I won't read them out, there's 5 points, including lot changes, not just the increase in density down in that area. And I think that is a change that has to be taken into account. The judge previously, when he moved his ruling, said that even though there are a lot of new people in that area, if there were submissions, that he doubts whether there'd be any more new information. I believe that would be presumptuous of us to presume that nothing has changed. A couple of changes I can think of is that with increased housing in that area, replacing all the hen housing, our green areas are being filled up and the chicken industry in Redlands is actually not viable and it is decreasing. With this change, there'll be less local fuel or manure for the biomass, which means two changes, and that's the increase in the big trucks which transport the manure, and that is increasing danger on the roads in that area, which also includes a local primary school with parking across the road. It's not only the increased danger on our roads, it's the increase in transport costs would also have an impact on the viability of the biomass. So that's just two changes which I think have already been spoken about today and is very obvious to anyone. The other one, someone actually mentioned to me yesterday, that if they were a financier or an investor in this, they would certainly want a new report. They would want to know all the up-to-date details before they invested or anything in it. So why isn't a community going to be given that same chance? All the new people there and the existing ones that have been lobbying against this for years, why aren't they getting given the chance that an investor would to have all the new information and open discussions on it? And I think that's something that we have to be very aware of, that the community is who we're here to represent. And that's one of my greatest values in this role, is to protect the community and the lifestyle that, you know, of who we are representing. So I can't say, as that judge did, that nothing has changed, because as Councillor Edwards has just pointed out, there's a point in time, and I really do think we've come to that point of time to say that the biomass has had time to start work. If it was really going to go ahead and be everything that it's meant to be, why hasn't it started? And I think the point of time now is 13 years on, and there's definitely been those changes. So all the points that we can talk on, I think they're more than strong enough, and they're listed, you know, on the wall. And it's all about representing our community and giving our community a chance to have that voice. And I think a judge these days would actually think of this point of time, which has increased since the last time, and all those changes have also increased with it. So I won't be voting in favour of the extension today, but I'll be voting in favour of this. Sorry, Councillor Elliott, did I give you a hernia then? I don't believe in a further extension, and I will be voting in favour of this changed motion. So I'll pass back to you to sum up.
Councillor Telly was just about to go and get the defib then, something like that. Thanks, Chair. Look, it's very, to the community, through you, to the community behind me and out there, this is very, very thin grounds. This is no silver bullet. This is all we've got to play with. It's not about the colour of the generator or the colour bond on the sheeting of the walls. This is simply about you guys having another say, and I think Councillor Edwards hit the nail on the head. Maybe it's nearly time, and I hopefully this time it will be. The fours and against, Councillor Telty, quite out there. Said, the fours and against, people need to know the fours and against. People 5 to 6, and this is, I'm quoting from that, 5 to 6 years have been there, and we're not aware. Not aware. That's people in the local community saying to their local council. Not people in my community or Councillor Hewlett alluded to, and that's why when I wrote this, that those people are the part of the community. This isn't just focused on Mount Cotton. This isn't just an isolated community out in the bush. This is everybody's in this one. So, but please, the community, this is as good as it gets. It's very thin grounds. Andrew will be losing a few more here when he tries to defend this. It is not, and he's starting to be a QC, I heard. But it's certainly no silver bullet. So please don't hang your hat, go and tell every ring mum in Sydney and say, look, it's a done deal. It's not a done deal till the judge makes that decision. So please don't go there. Think about it. If this gets up, we'll go and have a look, see what happens. And I hope that the judge at the time will make that position clear to the community. It's time we had another look. I agree with Councillor Telfy. The last thing we need out there is innuendo, misleading. Get the facts and circulate the facts. But this is where we're down to. All that's aside now, we're down to a couple of things. It's on communication with the community. That's all. Anything else you're circulating to other people on Facebook, take as rubbish. Take as rubbish. And don't get there. I'm sorry to hear people are fearful. And we need better comms, but I don't think it's us that needs better comms. I think it's Cleveland Power needs better communication with that immediate community. And, hey, I wouldn't have a problem if they were community. They'll stick it in the newsletter to tell my people. But, you know, you need to, you know, it's all right to have a nice website, but if you're not telling us anything about how good your power plant is, you need to have engage community. But I'm saying to them right now, go on and get your community group. If not, get it back on again. And just stick with the public, and you probably have a better outcome. If Councillor Telfy could come in and say, look, everybody knows what's going on, instead of everybody doesn't know what's going on, I think they'd get a far better outcome. Anyway, I'll stop talking at that point. I recommend the motion.
Thank you. So with that being finalised, I will put the motion as the amended motion, which is on the board. As this motion on the board. All in favour? Those against? Okay, I'll call it. All in favour? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay, Councillor Boglari. Those against? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Gleeson, and we note that Councillor Hughes has left the room now. The vote has been taken. Can someone give her a ring and tell her she can? Thank you, David. She can come back in. And thank you, officers, before you escape. David, thank you for coming up here today. It was a big decision, and we appreciate your time. We're just going to take a minute to wait for Councillor Hughes to come back if other councillors need to go for a quick run. Julie, could you stay in the room at the moment, please? Councillors.
Councillors, I'll just note that we will... Hold on, councillors. Those that are remaining, we will suspend the meeting. We have lost our quorum, so the meeting is suspended until we obtain a quorum.
Councillor Mitchell, can I have a seconder? Councillor Edwards. Councillor Mitchell, did you want to speak to that one, please?
No, not particularly on this. Just as the officers have reported, thanks.
Thank you. Was there any discussion or questions on that one?
I had asked a question, but Officer Peter Best is going to give me that information in a couple of days.
Great, thank you. So I'll put the motion then. All in favour? Passed unanimously with Councillor Tolte and Councillor Hughes out of the room. Thank you. So we don't have any mayoral minute. We don't have any number 13. We don't have any number 14. There's no urgent business without notice that... Councillor Elliott? Oh, I was getting to that one, yeah. If there's no discussion wanted in the detail of the next three, I'm just going to ask, are you happy to move into... not move into closed? Okay, Councillor Elliott, would you like to?
Have a move, suspend 1.1.
Okay, Seconded by Councillor Gleeson. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Can I have a mover and seconder for 16.2.1? Councillor Elliott. Seconded Councillor Gleeson. All in favour? Passed unanimously with Councillor Tolte out of the room. I keep looking at your empty chair over there. Sorry, Councillor Gleeson. 16.2.2, I have asked Giles to come forward just not to speak on the detail, but just to speak on what an LGIP actually is and the importance of it to us for the gallery. If Giles, are you happy to... He's not talking on the detail of what's in it. He's just explaining what an LGIP is and the importance of it. Okay, so can we just suspend standing orders for that to happen, please? Councillor Bishop moved it. Councillor Elliott seconded it. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. And Giles is just going to explain what one is, because to me it's an extremely important document that a lot of people probably don't realise. Thank you, Giles.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. So the LGIP is a key planning tool. It's needed to efficiently manage urban... No more acronyms.
Well, Elliot's having a nervous reaction to acronyms today.
So... So the Local Government Infrastructure Plan is the key planning tool needed to efficiently manage urban growth in the city of Redlands through the delivery of appropriate and cost-effective infrastructure. The NetServe plan reflects the latest water planning that is identified in the LGIP, and that's why it's coming to Council for a decision to go to public consultation. The LGIP integrates infrastructure planning with land use planning identified in the new city plan. It provides transparency regarding Council's intentions for trunk infrastructure. It enables Council to estimate the cost of providing infrastructure to assist in long-term financial planning. It ensures that trunk infrastructure is planned and provided in an efficient and orderly manner, and it justifies Council levying infrastructure charges. So while the Planning Minister, as you know, has given Council an extension until the 30th of June 2018 to adopt the Local Government Infrastructure Plan, Council needs its LGIP to commence with the new city plan in order that Council can continue to levy infrastructure charges and to condition development about infrastructure. That's it in a nutshell.
Can you also just explain how it flows into the city plan and how we have to tie it all up? And
That's pretty much my last point. It's, the LTIP is part four of the city plan, and although you can have a city plan without an LGIP, if you don't have the LGIP in it, we can't charge infrastructure charges or condition development for infrastructure.
Thank you.
Giles just allude to the process from here after it's passed?
Sure. So the process is stated in Statutory Guideline 314. It runs a similar process to the planning scheme, but with some shorter time frames. This resolution here is to go to the Minister for the first state interest review and then on to public consultation. Following that, there's a submission report and the LGIP is returned to the Minister for a second state interest review and then it comes back to Council for adoption.
So I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank Giles and everybody else who was involved in it. This is the thickness of it, and so when you're carrying that up and down your steps going home to read it, I didn't think too highly of you then, but it's amazing the amount of work in here and the detail. It's very important for councillors to have a look in here. Infrastructure right down to our parks and everything is in here, not just the big stuff like the roads, which is an extremely important one of our key priorities at the moment, but also the water. So with increased housing happening everywhere, we've got to make sure we have our water systems maintained, but also we've got to know where we're going to be putting money into new systems. So it's extremely important document. There are a few points that Giles and I will be just discussing further on. But I just want to say thank you, because it's a huge amount of work, and it's very clear to follow. And I will now ask councillors to move a motion to resume standing. Councillor Bishop moved it, seconded Councillor Gleeson. All in favour of resuming? Thank you. And now we go back to Councillor Elliott. Were you moving that one initially? 16.2. Yep, so moving 16.2.2, Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Bishop. All in favour? Thank you, councillors. Passed unanimously. Giles? Thank you very much. Okay. That's it. With that, I will officially close the meeting at 11:49 and thank the residents for coming in today.